Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with your host, the Honorable Sam Rohrer, President of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most pressing issues impacting our economy, our homes, our churches, our culture, and our daily lives from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Stand in the Gap Today, transforming the culture one heart at a time.
Well, what do the abrupt firings of Roseanne Barr by ABC executives, the attack against John Bolton's assistant, Fred Flights, and the imprisonment of Tommy Robinson from the United Kingdom have in common? You ever think about that? What does the strategy of personal destruction, intimidation, and imprisonment have in common and with those other? Well, we're going to talk about this in just a moment with expert and special guest Dave Bailey. With our first theme of our segment, first two segments, we're going to call it this, the Muslim Brotherhood's Stealth War Against the West. And therein you may find a little bit of the tie-in. Now, in the second half of the program, we're going to shift gears and we're going to focus on the theme of the recent school shootings and how many parents are responding. And that's going to be with our special guest, Mike Smith, who is the president of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. So please stay with us for the entire program as we'll be presenting information that is true, mostly ignored, unfortunately, yet critically important to know. And with that roadmap for today's program, I'd like to welcome you to Stand in the Gap Today. I'm Sam Rohrer, and I'm going to be joined by Evangelist Dave Kistler and Dr. Gary Dahl. And in this first half, my guest, Dave Bailey, researcher and educator. And with that, I want to welcome you to the program today. Dave, glad that you are with us.
Glad to be here.
Dave, we got a lot to cover in this moment, and so I'm going to get right into it. The last time we had you on this program, we talked about the port of Wilmington, that it was being bought by Islamic Middle Eastern powers, and the threat that that was to our nation. And that process allowing that was something that Barack Obama had greased the skids to permit. And we don't have time to get an update on this critical issue today. We're going to pick that up on a later. However, we're going today identify three examples of how the Muslim Brotherhood and Islamic infiltrators into Western culture are very extraordinarily successful in stifling our First Amendment rights of anyone who opposes them. And I mentioned three people, Roseanne Barr, Fred Flights, and Tommy Robinson. In the next segment, I'd like for you to bring these examples together. So, Dave, this is where we're going to go. Our listeners are aware that Roseanne Barr was abruptly fired by ABC because of one single statement that she made on a recent program. That statement was in reference to Valerie Jarrett, who was an advisor to Barack Obama, but also a practicing Muslim and one that was known to be associated with the Muslim Brotherhood. Now, Roseanne said about Valerie Jarrett that she looked like she was the child of, quote, and this was a statement, child of Muslim Brotherhood and Planet of the Apes. Now, that's what she said. And even though such cryptic comments are regularly made by such program hosts, ABC fired Roseanne. And yesterday, Roseanne tweeted, "I'm making restitution for the pain I have caused." In simple terms, what really, Dave, was the cause for her termination, and what influence could be so strong to force not only her firing, but a public apology days later?
This is an excellent question, and I hope that in our discussion we're going to connect some very big and important dots. There is something that ties a whole bunch of things together, and starting with the case of Roseanne Barr, her statement was that Muslim Brotherhood and Planet of the Apes had a baby, and that was Valerie Jarrett. The focus of the media has been on the racial component of that. But we see these kinds of things going on all the time. For example, Bill Maher called Trump, our President Trump, an orangutan, okay? And yet, you know, there was no talk about firing him, and not even close to that. Now, on one level, we talk about it being an unlevel playing field, but it's really all red herring. There's a whole other side that people have forgotten about, and that was the Muslim Brotherhood. This, by saying what she said, she associated Valerie Jarrett with the Muslim Brotherhood, and that is the real red line that was crossed that caused this to be something to be for her to be fired right away. Okay, I mean it was immediate, and to see that in the proper context, so you can see how this is working. We also want to look at what's going on with Fred Fleets, who is the has just been appointed to be the chief of staff for John Bolton at the National Security Council.
And Dave, we're going to get into that in the next segment. If we could just stay right on here with Valerie Jarrett. Dave Kistler, I know you might have a question for him, if you could, please.
I do, Sam. And Dave, grateful to have you on the program. Thank you for what you do and for your insight into all of this.
Mm-hmm.
What was interesting to me was immediately after Roseanne Barr made the statement, in fact, Roseanne has since said she didn't even know Valerie Jarrett was black. She didn't know that by her name or by her appearance or any of that. And yet the cry against Roseanne and the basis upon which she was fired was this concept that she is a racist. Now, my question to you is this. Is there any legitimacy to that claim, or is there something strategic going on within the Muslim Brotherhood to level this charge of racism against not just Roseanne, but anybody that would make a comment that's against the Muslim Brotherhood?
Yes, and just to revisit your point about the Planet of the Apes, the key thing most people don't realize, but if you remember the movies, the apes in the Planet of the Apes were white, and the way you knew that was because there was a militant general in the movie who was a black gorilla, okay? So you knew that these apes are actually white. So the whole charge of this being racist is flatly ridiculous. The overall objective that we're talking about here is the aim of equating Islam with a race. And no matter how much we deny it and point out how ridiculous it is, it keeps being driven home over and over again. And there's an underlying message here that Christianity is white and Islam is for people of color. And you will hear people like Linda Sarsour make that claim over and over again, as ridiculous as it is. For among many other reasons, Muhammad himself in the Hadith is described as being white, not just white, but really white as it gets. Okay, he was shining in whiteness. Okay, and so this is another thing that Islamists want to bury, the whole fact that Muhammad himself was very white. And he actually had slaves, and he referred to Ethiopians as slaves. These things they don't want to talk about because the political agenda is to use the racial tensions in the United States as a way to overthrow the existing society and use race as the lever for accomplishing that.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Stand in the Gap today. I'm Sam Rohr, accompanied by Dave Kistler and Gary Dahl. Our special guest is Dave Bailey. He's an educator, he's a researcher, and we're talking about this issue of personal destruction, intimidation, and imprisonment, the Muslim Brotherhood's stealth war against the West. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about two more examples, Fred Fleets and Tommy Robinson from the United Kingdom, both very similar to Roseanne in some respects, all examples of things we're going to take and connect the dots about when we return in just a moment. Hello, this is Sam Rohr. Although the term Christian education doesn't occur in the Bible, it does speak of the moral and spiritual instruction of children. It places a high value on knowledge, both of God and His works. It describes the moral and spiritual fruits of this knowledge and defines its ultimate purpose, the growth of your child in godliness of character and action. That's why we suggest you consider BJU Press K-12 materials. Your child's a unique individual created for a specific purpose. Proper instruction that includes the Bible and the relational influence of godly teachers produces a pure heart and a willing mind. The Bible calls that success. BJU Press materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. They teach critical thinking skills and keep your child engaged and excited about learning. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap today. For more information, visit our website at standinthegapradio.com.
The strategic destruction of people who speak out against Islam, or the Muslim Brotherhood, or the dangers of Sharia, or those who simply and objectively report the facts, are being systematically attacked. And it's not just here in the United States, but across the Western world. One effective way is to utilize the power of personal destruction, as we just talked about in the case of Roseanne Barr. Now, in reality, was her comment appropriate? No. Was it intended to get a response? Sure it was. But why such a swift rebuke for her when so many other Hollywood types and show hosts regularly attack the president, attack Christianity, attack the Constitution or conservatives, and then the wagons are circled in protection and defense of their comments by the left under First Amendment protections? Could it be that there is a powerful and destructive ideology that, like termites or parasites, have invaded the host and are destroying it from within? Well, I submit, ladies and gentlemen, there are three major strategies we are witnessing. One, personal destruction. Two, intimidation. And third, even imprisonment. And we're going to talk about two more examples now with our special guest, Dave Bailey. Dave, we've just talked about Roseanne Barr and her comments about Valerie Jarrett as example number one of personal destruction against anyone who makes a pejorative comment about a Muslim, and how that comment is identified as a racist comment. But there's also the strategy of intimidation as being used against the new assistant to a national security advisor to President Trump, John Bolton. His name is Fred Fleets. That came forth yesterday, and one report, I'm just going to read here what was in the report, because they're accusing him of having negative or jihadist claims about Islam. And the statement read this, quote, "The Anti-Defamation League, the Council on American Islamic Relations, and other groups said that Fred Fleets should not serve as Chief of Staff to National Security Advisor John Bolton because, now get this, he has advanced what they call Islamophobic views," end quote. All right, Dave, here it is again. It's in here. Tell us what's happening here in this example of intimidation as we're witnessing right now with this individual's name, Fred Fleets, Chief of Staff to John Bolton.
With the case of Fred Fleets, the issue is what he did before being given this position. And before he was in this position working for Mr. Bolton, he was a vice president with the Center for Security Policy, which is an organization founded by Frank Gaffney, who is one of the most prominent and long-term people speaking out against the Islamic threat. And basically, the uproar is coming from the left because of what Fred Fleets did for this organization, and particularly a publication they put out talking about the radicalization of Islam in the United States. And he has been forced to disavow the entire document, even though he was one of, I guess, about 12 co-authors. So he, you know, he says, well, the part that I played was very, very small. I don't endorse everything that was in it. And that is the only way that he could hold on to this position and quell this rising scream of opposition against him. And the whole idea that he would have to do something like that is ridiculous, but it reflects the power that the Islamic alliance with the left has in the United States in squashing any opposition. In other words, he has to do that simply to hold the position that he's got. And the reason why this is really important is it actually ties into our former discussion about Gulf Tainter and the Port of Wilmington, because two of the most prominent writers who have been investigating Gulf Tainter, particularly with the Port Canaveral deal, are Alan Jones and Mary Fanning, who also work for the Center for Security Policy. So you can be sure that Fred Fleets is completely up on what's going on with Gulf Tainter. So for us, this is tremendous news, because right now the Gulf Tainter deal is going through a CFIUS review, national security threat analysis, at the federal level, and now we've got somebody that we know is aware of the problem, and he is there, and he is dramatically improving the outlook for a proper security analysis being done on Gulftainer in the port of Wilmington. And that's part of the reason why the left and the Islamists are so determined to get him out of there, because he's actually one of the good guys seeking to defend America and its citizenry. And so the issue we're talking about here is the Muslim Brotherhood and the way, and particularly through CARE. CARE is the instrument through which the Muslim Brotherhood acts in the United States. But it's actually much bigger than that. It gets back to the attempt by the Organization for Islamic Conference, which has huge influence on the United Nations. It's a group of 57 Islamic nations. And what they've been trying to do at the UN is make the criticism of Islam illegal throughout the entire world. And back in the days when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, she said, well, we can't possibly do that. America has the First Amendment. But I tell you what, let's make a compromise. And this is called the Istanbul process. For those who remember, talk about the Istanbul process. The whole goal was to work out a compromise with the Islamic world so that everybody can be happy and we can stop being in conflict over this. And this is what the Obama administration came up with as the solution. Of course, we have the First Amendment in the United States. So instead of making talk about Islam illegal, they're going to use peer pressure and shaming to control what people say. And that was back in 2011, and that is effectively what we are seeing implemented right now through organizations like the Southern Poverty Law Center, which can identify organizations that are opposed to political Islam, the Islamist threat, jihadists, and turn them into hate groups. And through that, we have a mechanism to basically override the First Amendment, not by throwing people in prison for saying things against Islam, but just destroying them instead, destroying their careers, like what we saw with Roseanne Barr.
You know, it's
For security policy, where Mr. Fleets comes from, is actually listed as a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center.
You know, it's unfortunate that we've even got to be dealing with these things. And, you know, you mentioned Frank Gaffney. He's a friend of us here at Stand in the Gap, and we support what he does with the Center for Security Policy. And, Dave, I think that only time is going to tell what the Obama administration has done to make the United States of America more Islamic friendly. And I'm glad that we have a president who understands the issues and stands against it. And we must pray for him that God will give him the wisdom to make clear stands and be strong as we go forward. But let's look at another example here. I'm going to mention the name Tommy Robinson, who is from the United Kingdom, who, because he spoke out and identified the extensive and systematic rapes of young girls in the United Kingdom by roving Muslim gangs, He referred to them as grooming gangs. He also was accused of racism and actually placed in prison. And I'm wondering, Dave, if you could share with us the essence of his crime and his punishment and who was behind it as well.
Yes, what's happened with Tommy Robinson is just tragic, but it's a symptom of how far off the once Great Britain has gone into Islamist control. There's two points here. One is what we're seeing in the United States is not restricted to the United States. This is a global phenomenon that's going on throughout the West. And again, that makes sense because the Organization of Islamic Conference, which is a umbrella group for 57 Islamic nations, and of course has the support of groups like the Muslim Brotherhood. They're all united on this. They may disagree with each other on some things, but they are united in trying to take over the world in the name of Islam. And so in the case of Great Britain sold its soul in about 2006-2007 timeframe when it declared that it wanted to make London the Sharia finance capital of the West. And what was the big lure for that is the oil money of the Middle East. They wanted to attract it into the great banking institutions of London, and they were willing to sell out the country in order to do it. And what has happened since then is a continuous increase of Islamic power in Great Britain, and Tommy Robinson is just the latest and most dramatic illustration of how that power has grown. He is simply trying to call attention to rape gangs, and primarily Muslim, primarily Pakistani rape gangs that have been taking place, or raping thousands and thousands of British girls, you know, indigenous British girls, for years across the whole country, and law enforcement has been turning a blind eye to it. In fact, quite often prosecuting the girl instead of the rapist, because she shouldn't have been out there. She should, you know, they find some way to actually attack the girl, which is just horrendous.
Why, Dave Bailey, we're going to have to go. We're coming up on a hard break. Thank you for being with us. Ladies and gentlemen, you've got to hear this information, and this, unfortunately, is real. It is true, but we have to know it. Now, when we come back, we're going to change gears. We're going to invite in special guest Mike Smith. He is the president of Homeschool Legal Defense, and we're going to talk about parents responding to school shootings. How are they doing that? We're going to talk about that with Mike Smith in just a moment.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap today, discussing the pressing issues facing our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Now let's rejoin our host.
Thank you for being with us today on Stand in the Gap. And if you are just joining us, we are shifting gears here in the middle of the program. We just focused on the issue of personal destruction, intimidation, and imprisonment as it's being used by Muslim Brotherhood and Islamic supporting people to oppose those who even raise their voice. We're going to shift gears in this segment, though, in just a moment, and go to a different topic altogether, but of equal importance. And again, if you're just joining us, I welcome you to Stand in the Gap today, and remind everyone here that you can pick up this program and its archives on our website at standinthegapradio.com, off of our free app by looking for it under Stand in the Gap. That's how you download the app, all of the archives to both the radio program that we're doing here, our weekend program, and our new Stand in the Gap TV program. All of those can be found on either one of those two. And if you are listening to the program, and we know so many are, and you enjoy the program, and we know so many are, because we're hearing from them, communicate to us. If you've never dropped us a line before, drop us a note. Let us know what you think about Stand in the Gap Radio, what we're doing here, the guests that we have. Offer suggestions if you have them. Anything that we want to hear from you. It's just very, very important. And I also encourage you to remember that we are a ministry. We depend upon the financial support of those who are listening to this program and other programs across the country. And if we are being used of God to fill a need in your life by providing the truth, biblical truth, we would ask that you come alongside of us. So very, very, very critical and much appreciated. Well, we're all too aware, as we shift gears, that the sad and the deplorable killing sprees that we've seen in recent months in public schools, we've talked a lot about it on this program, the wanton destruction of human life and disregard for property is so very clear. And while the opponents of the Second Amendment have gone after guns as their resolve, certain other public officials have only pandered, creating further division, which they think may keep them favored by the public. On this program, though, we've talked about it, that neither of those things are the resolve. We've talked here about the need for repentance and the addressing of the root cause of this problem as sin, and it's only solvable through redemption, a changed life through faith in Jesus Christ. Yet, into the middle of this morass, which, as we know, has not been solved across the country, it's not going to be solved anytime really soon until people come to Christ, and that is not yet happening on a broad-based basis, parents are making decisions, as rightly they should. Parents as first-line defenders and protectors of their children. They're responding in large numbers. And we're going to talk about this, the balance of the program, and the theme here is going to be parents respond to school shootings, one bright spot. We're going to welcome in to talk with us about that Mike Smith. He is the president of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. Mike, thank you for being with us today.
Well, thank you for having us. How are you doing?
Doing very, very well, and we're glad that you are continuing to do the job that you and Mike Ferris did years ago when you started the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, and what a benefit and a blessing, Mike, it has been to really all people in the country who are concerned about freedom, but specifically those who have chosen to homeschool their children. So thank you very much.
Well, you're very welcome. And Pastor Sam, I have to say, you've been a tremendous support for all these many years. And so I want to thank you and just thank you for all you're doing. I was just listening to your previous program, and it's just amazing the information that you're able to get out there to help us understand what's going on. So thank you very much.
Well, you are welcome, and we're glad to walk alongside. Well, Mike, the reason I wanted to ask you to be on here is that I set it up in that last segment that, you know, parents being the frontline defenders, we believe clearly as ordained by God, they're the ones responsible for their children's education, that they're doing something because government's not going to be solving this problem anytime soon with these matters of the school. But I heard a news clip which prompted me to think of having you on here just a couple of days ago. It was a clip from Texas that said that in Texas, the homeschool organization there were receiving, they generally receive, I think it was like 700, I think they had said, calls a month from parents who are interested in homeschooling. That had jumped to about 1,700 or something like that, a substantial increase. I want to come back and ask you, what are you finding as being there on the vanguard of personal freedom, educational freedom for parents? What are you hearing in response to these shootings? And is that incident in Texas true? And talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, Sam, yes, we are seeing an increase in calls and interest in homeschooling as a result of the concerns about the public school shooting. The one that actually caused the most calls we had was the shooting in Florida. And we actually keep track of folks that join here, what states they join from, try to find out why they're joining, et cetera. And so in the months that followed the shooting in Florida, our Florida membership jumped considerably. And so we know actually that's a direct relationship to, obviously, the shootings down there. We also know that we had the significant number of jumps in Texas as well. So, yes, it's true. There is no doubt that more and more parents that have their children in public schools are now having to consider whether their children are safe. Many of them are saying, I don't think they are. And so they're having to look at alternatives. And, of course, private education affords a couple of alternatives. One would be private schools. And Sam, as you know, most private schools' tuition is pretty expensive today. So for a lot of families, that's not possible, I suppose. So then they're thinking, what's left? Well, homeschooling is left. Well, what is that? Oh, that's me taking responsibility, direct responsibility, actual responsibility for my children's education. So how do I do that? And a lot of them have never considered this before they actually start thinking about how to protect their children. So they really have to start from ground one. What is homeschooling? And, you know, we get some interesting misconceptions, Sam, about homeschooling. We had a call here several years ago. I'll never forget it. One of the gals came in and said, Mr. Smith, you won't believe it. I got a call from a woman. She said, I'm interested in homeschooling. Can you tell me where I can take my child? And I thought, well, that's not exactly the concept of homeschooling. So I'm not belittling that. I'm just saying this is for a lot of folks, Sam. This is a completely new idea for them. They may have heard about it, but I would never do it, right? I think you've probably tried homeschooling at one time or another, right?
We did for 26 years, Mike.
There you go. So when you talk to parents, and of course you're sold on homeschooling, you're an evangelist for it, and you're saying, why wouldn't you try it? They say, oh, I could never do that. How many times have you heard that?
Mike, let me ask you this, and by the way, this is Dave, and we homeschooled our children, all three of them, all the way from beginning all the way to them going off to college, and it was a great experience. And of course, I'm a traveling evangelist.
And I know your kids are grateful for it.
Well, they are. There was a time they weren't, but they are now. You know, they thought they were missing out on a lot of things, but now they realize they got to see the world as we traveled and got to be homeschooled in that environment. But, you know, a lot of times I hear this statement made, Mike, you know, homeschooling is not for everyone. And sometimes, you know, the implication is that certain people are just not cut out for this. What would you say to those who would make that statement? You know, it's not for everyone, maybe just for a select few.
Well, I say that statement that it's not for everyone is actually true because realistically we know that's not going to happen. Everybody's not going to homeschool. But I don't think it's correct to say that everybody couldn't homeschool. Now, there are families that where parents both have to work or whatever, but the question really comes down to how much do I really value this home education? If I think it's actually valuable to me, as you two know, if it's actually valuable to me and I think it's actually the only way that I want my children educated, you know what? I'll make it happen. And so I think it's just a matter of how important you think it is to you, how committed you can be to it. And if that's the case, I think most people could do it. That's my opinion.
Mm. You know, that's a very interesting statement. And, you know, we did not homeschool our children, but of course I have a son who was in Ecuador and he homeschooled his children for years. And, you know, they just turned out very, very well. Where I want to go with this, Mike, is, you know, back in the 1960s and 70s, when the Supreme Court overturned prayer and Bible reading in public school, and then, of course, they took the Ten Commandments out of the public school, the Christian education movement was birthed and went quite strong. And, of course, I was involved with it back in those days. Now, do you think that in light of what is going on in the public schools today, that there is going to be a growth and further development of homeschooling? I mean, we're talking about security in the public schools. I think that there's probably a question on security in the Christian schools. Is there not? And so is that going to cause a growth and further development of the homeschool situation, do you believe?
Yes, there's no doubt that it's going to, and we're seeing it, obviously. Now, of course, if somehow these shootings should stop, I suppose that would have a kind of a dampening effect on homeschooling. But let's say, God forbid, but let's say they continue, and I think you're talking about, of course, the solution is a change of heart, and there's some very desperate
Amen.
People that are doing this. I mean, obviously, how you stop people like that, very difficult. So I don't think that we necessarily know what's going to happen in the future, but probably man's not going to get any more righteous, right? So if this continues, I don't think there's any doubt there'll be more and more. There'll be a growth of homeschooling.
And Mike, I think so as well. And whether or not, ladies and gentlemen, we see an actual new gigantic surge like we had back in the 60s or 70s, we'll find out. But one thing for sure is that parents, if you're listening, you do have primary responsibility for your children. Be thinking very carefully about who is having primary input into their lives. And of course, that's one of the things that comes alongside homeschooling and parents who decide to do that. It is a bigger change on the parents, I can tell you, than it is on the children. It's a commitment that is huge, but the payoffs are also very, very good. Now, when we come back, I'm going to talk with Mike further about what is happening legislatively, because there are a lot of folks who don't like freedom of education and they don't like parents' involvement in it. And we're going to get an update from Mike on legal challenges and also good things that may be happening. Christian parents want their children to excel in spiritual growth and educational achievement. Both are essential for future success in an increasingly complex world full of moral and economic challenges. BJU Press Materials place great value on the knowledge of God in His works. They teach critical thinking skills your child will need to get along both now and in the future. BJU Press Materials are available for grades K-12. From the earliest grades, they teach biblical Christianity as a system of God-revealed truths. BJU Press Materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. Teachers' editions assure that instructors have the plans and extra tools to keep your child engaged and excited about learning by teaching your child how to analyze, evaluate, and ultimately create new solutions. And that's just what today's workplace is looking for. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap today. For more information, visit our website at standinthegapradio.com.
Well, for parents to become concerned about the safety of their students in public schools or any school as far as that goes, that's a good thing. But for parents to consider what is being taught in those public schools that can lead students to ignore concerns or fear of God or the value of human life or for decency, that is essential. What our children are taught, what they see praised and glamorized in the culture, and the system of morality with which they are inculcated are all predictors of what that next generation is going to become. And parents are the primary ones, we believe biblically, who should do what is necessary to train up and teach their children in the ways of God if we want to keep our freedom and keep the blessing that God has put on this nation. Homeschooling and parents who homeschool in particular have led the way for maintaining that right of parents to educate and for governments to be in their secondary or assistive role, not a lead role. Yet this freedom is always under attack, and it has to be safeguarded. Homeschool Legal Defense Association is the one organization that has done so very much for the freedom, not just of homeschoolers. They're on the vanguard of freedom, but freedom for Christian education, for private schooling as well. And I want to invite back in now Mike Smith, who is the president of Homeschool Legal Defense Association, to talk with us about it. Because, Mike, when you were on the program with us last time, you mentioned a very disastrous idea that was moving its way through the California legislature that, if it would have gone forward, would attack homeschooling in a big, big way. Give us an update on where that sits, what's happened to it, and then tell us a little bit about what's happening there in California, because oftentimes we say the prevailing winds blow from California across the rest of the country. So what's happening there in California?
Well, the good news is, Sam, the last time we talked, there have been two bills that have been introduced in the state of California to further regulate homeschooling. And so those bills have been defeated. I am happy to say that they are,
praise the Lord,
they're dead. And what happened actually is we had two different bills that were introduced. One would have basically commissioned a study through a committee of homeschooling and come back with a recommendation to further regulate homeschooling. That bill was actually withdrawn and didn't actually go to a hearing. But on April 25th, the other bill, which started out with a requirement that annually there would be an annual fire inspection by the fire inspector every year of homeschooling, where homeschooling is taking place in those homes, which, of course, was a violation of the Fourth Amendment. And the author actually withdrew that part of his bill. But he went forward with the other aspect of the bill, which would have mandated more information on homeschoolers, personal information, identifying information for children, et cetera, and then make that public. And when that bill was actually presented on April 25th for a public hearing, beginning at 1:30 in Sacramento, California, around 3,000 homeschoolers showed up, and over 1,300 actually testified in opposition to that bill. The hearing took over 3 hours. At the end of the hearing, the seven-member committee, 5 Democrats and 2 Republicans, the motion was a call for a motion to advance the bill, and nobody would advance it, so it died for lack of a motion. And so, quite frankly, we're quite relieved in California and rejoicing that we were able to actually stop those two efforts to regulate homeschooling. I was very suspicious that we would be able to do it because I assumed that the Democratic control on that committee, the Education Committee, would have actually supported their author of the bill, who was a Democrat as well, but that did not happen. And I will tell you that I think the reason was there was a massive, massive opposition with letters and phone calls, personal visits, emails, you name it. The homeschool community in California, Sam, rose up, and because of their grassroots participation, I think that bill was defeated.
Mike, this is incredibly encouraging stuff that you're sharing with us, and I want to just ask you this. Can you comment on, positive or negative, some things that are going on across the country that are going to affect Christian education in general, homeschooling in particular? Things that our listeners need to know about, things about which we can pray.
Well, this, Dave, I think that what we have to be concerned about is what we're seeing in California and their efforts in private schools to advance the kind of curriculum and extracurricular teaching that are going on in the public schools. And I do believe at some point, I hope I'm wrong, but I do believe at some point some legislature, probably California, is going to be one of the more liberal states, is going to take the position that the private schools have to teach the same kind of indoctrination, if you will, that is being put on public school students. And that will be a major battle. That will not be unlike the battle that took place over the Bible and prayer. And, of course, those were lost in the courts, not the legislature. So this will be a legislative battle. And at that point, all private education, homeschoolers, private schools, anybody that cares about freedom, are going to have to get together and oppose this. Or I think we're going to see something we've never seen before, and that is the curriculum mandate on private schools by the state. That's the biggest threat I see coming down the pike, and that's something we need to be concerned about. That's the negative side. The positive side, I continue to see more and more parents, and we talked about it earlier, that are really concerned about their children's education. And like in California, they actually see the freedom that underlies that. Because as was pointed out earlier, this is home education is popular in some places and very unpopular in others, and specifically around the education establishment that really don't like the fact that parents are controlling the content and the total, basically, upbringing of their children. So I see that parents that are actually getting involved now are seeing that we need to, in the area of freedom, we need to see that that is the, that's the platform, that's the fundamental upon which we basically rest our right to homeschool, this freedom to be free from the state making us teach our children what we don't want to teach them and raise them in a way we don't want to raise them. So that's really going to be this, the challenge as well.
Mike, it will be, and it has been always, and I'm just so glad you guys are there as a leader in that effort. If our listeners have interest in HSLDA, give the website and how they can find out more information about that.
Yeah, it's hslda.org, or they can call us. Just call, and if they have questions, we'll be glad to answer them. They can call us at 540-338-5600. We look forward to hearing from any folks that have any interest in home education.
Excellent. Mike Smith, thank you for being with us today on the program. You've been a real blessing and information.
And thank you again.
You are quite welcome. And Gary and Dave, we say goodbye to Mike here. Ladies and gentlemen, you hear ads on this program all the time from one of our sponsors, BJU Press. They produce biblical worldview curriculum. That's excellent and well done. Now, many, many homeschoolers use it. Many in Christian schools use it. But you can pray for them and think about them as well, because as Mike was saying, the effort to try and corral curriculum, that is the way government has always attempted to control education by mandating what's in the curriculum. But BJU Press produces a curriculum designed for homeschooling and for Christian schooling that keeps a biblical worldview right at its center, and it's excellently done. And so that's why we are glad that they are sponsoring the program in part, and we want to encourage your participation there. Gary, can I ask you to close the program in prayer, if we could, as we get to the end here?
Sure. And Father, I pray, number one, for the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, that you'll continue to give Mike and others involved with it the wisdom to stand strong and make the right decisions that will strengthen the homeschool ministry. I pray for parents, that you will speak to their lives and their hearts through your Holy Spirit and through your word to see that their children are being given a biblical worldview education. And Lord, I just ask and pray that as we draw closer to the return of your Son, Jesus Christ, that education will become more biblical in the Christian homes. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Amen. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being with us today. On behalf of Gary Dahl and Dave Kistner and myself and our guest today, we thank you for being with us and invite you to be back tomorrow. Gary and I will be back with George Barna tomorrow as we involve ourselves in some breaking information relative to the research that he has worked on. You'll enjoy it. Be with us tomorrow. We'll see you back then.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap Today. Stand in the Gap Today is another quality ministry of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most pressing issues affecting the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. We take seriously the command to be salt and light, and the mission to declare truth in the public square. Stand in the Gap Radio is supported through the prayers and tax-deductible financial gifts from listeners like you. Would you please consider a donation to help us increase our outreach of biblical truth? To learn more about us and make your donation, please visit StandInTheGapRadio.com. You may also give from our smartphone app. Download the Stand in the Gap app. Search for it in your web store under the heading Stand in the Gap. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in every weekday at the same time for Stand in the Gap Today.